almost let it go there. I almost let it go. Happy Wednesday, everyone. I am Hank Jones. You are listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports on Global Patriot Radio here at blogtalkradio.com. Ah, it's Wednesday, March the 2nd, 2022. Gosh, March already. God, 2021 was yesterday. It's already 2022 and we're in the third month. Yikes. Scary stuff. Hey, as I said, Global Patriot Radio, every day here on blogtalkradio.com, there is a show emanating from Global Patriot Radio Network starting Mondays. The Vito Esposito Show featuring Vito himself along with Big Al, talking about events of the day, the week, etc., especially as it relates to Islamic incursion into the American way of life and their desire to force it on us and eliminate our way of life. That's at 6 o'clock Eastern time every Monday. And then on Tuesdays, Eric with the Cross and the Crescent dialogue or discussion. Eric compares and contrasts what's going on in the Christian world and the Islamic world, and does a pretty darn good job of pointing out the fallacies of things like, oh, Islam is a religion of peace, those kinds of things. Wednesdays, of course, me, Hank Jones, at 5:30 Eastern. Thursdays, Paul Sutliff with the Sutliffian Rapal goes into the same sorts of things that Vito and Eric do, as well as getting a little further afield in the worlds of politics and world news. And then Fridays at noon, Conservative Casual Friday, Andrew Herod. And both Paul and Andrew get really good guests on. They have some real connections out there, and so they've gotten some great guests over the last several months and years. And then Saturday night, from 10 p.m. to midnight, Minister Usama Dakduk, the beautiful Christie, revealing the truth about Islam. That's 2 hours every Saturday night. And, you know, you don't have to, because of it, you don't have to partake in Pac-12 sports. That's the best reason of all. And then Sundays, Eric is back with Real Interfaith Dialogue. To interact with this show, offline, if you will, hjpsports1980@gmail.com. Go to Facebook and look for Hank Jones Polysports. Go to Twitter and look at HPolysports. That's where you usually find, or that's where you always find my little showrunner for what's going to happen. I'll provide the link, etc. And then, you know, talking live, 319-527-6706. That affords you the ability to both listen in, as we have three listeners right now, or if you want to hit the one, you can talk and ask a question or whatever, or you can just come in line, you know, come in through Global Patriot or blogtalkradio.com, find the live button, look for chatters down on the right-hand side, which will tell you what live shows are on at the time, and you'll see Global Patriot Radio amongst them. Time, if you're here at like 6 in the morning, no. But if you're here at 5:30 on Wednesday, yes, because it's me. Absolutely. My wife and my little Aussie are, of course, in the house, little Aussie fed. She'll sack out for a little while, but you know, I'll tell you what, Australian Shepherds, especially many Aussies, they, their DNA says move, 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 jump, 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 and so she does. Adorably, but nevertheless, she does. Actually, she's been digging in the backyard for a while. We got her to stop it, but we got some fill dirt from a neighbor who's doing a project. I'm hoping she doesn't suddenly decide it's a new project for her as well. But you never know. You never know. They're unpredictable. Recent obituaries. Last Thursday, actress Sally Kellerman. I know, MASH. But my personal favorite role of hers is Back to School. She passed away from heart failure in an assisted living facility where she was actually there for suffering from dementia. She was 84. And then we also lost retired NFLer Ken Burrow at age 73. No cause listed. He spent his career with the Houston Oilers. He was drafted by the New Orleans Saints. Spent one season there, most of it injured. Point of trivia, he was the last NFL player auto retired for Ken did, thus Ken Burrow with that distinction. Friday, we lost a centenarian and former Austrian politician, Eleanor Schönborn, at 101. We also lost Farrah Fork. Now, not Farrah Fawcett, Farrah Fork. She was on the show Wings. If you remember that show, one of the brothers, I think it was Brian, she was the girlfriend. She was a semi-regular and then became a regular the last couple seasons. Anyway, she passed away from cancer at just 54. Really sad. She'd had some health challenges at the beginning of her career and then later in her career. 54 years old. Saturday, let's see, Saturday we lost American rapper Snooty Wild at age 36. Yeah, like most rappers who die way too young, he was shot. Shot in Houston. We also lost the widow of Ernest Borgnine. Tova Borgnine was 80. No cause given. In addition to being his wife at the time, she was also quite the cosmetics entrepreneur. Infomercials and things like that. I guess you'd say, yeah, entrepreneur. As someone pointed out, I remember Farrah Fork being hot back in the day. She most certainly was. Very attractive young actress. As was Tova Borgnine, a very attractive woman. Sunday we lost Ned Eisenberg. Now, most people are going to say, who the hell is that? He's one of my favorite veteran character actors, or a VCA as we called them in college. He passed away from bile duct cancer at 65. Now, he was a true VCA. He's one of those guys you had to see him at least 10 times before you finally wondered who he was, and then you'd have to watch the end credits in order to get his name. That's a true veteran character actor. I mean, if you know somebody after their first or second, you know, second or third role, that's not a veteran character actor. This guy was a veteran character actor. Some great episodes of Law and Order and their spinoffs. Good actor. Now, today we lost film industry producer and executive Alan Ladd Jr. Yes, he was the son of that actor Alan Ladd from Shane. Alan Ladd Jr. was 84. He worked in production or behind the scenes on numerous films, amongst them Police Academy, the Brady Bunch movie, Braveheart, Thelma and Louise, Night Shift, The Right Stuff, and then the company he co-founded, the Ladd Company, also produced one of my favorite films of all time, Once Upon a Time in America. So end of an era there with the Ladd family. Let's see, news. This one will no doubt serve as an anti-Second Amendment rally cry. It'll get shot down, so to speak, later on. But a man opened fire in a Sacramento church Monday night. He killed his three children. He also killed the person who was supervising a parental visit with the man and his three daughters before he turned the gun on himself. Yeah, you can bet the anti-second crowd is going to rally with this. It's going to fizzle out when everyone sees the facts. Here are some of them. He was under a temporary restraining order from his estranged wife. She's cooperating with authorities, of course. According to a domestic violence report, that order should have restricted him, at least temporarily, from possessing a firearm. He walked into a church where the visit was to take place. He killed the visit supervisor first and then his three daughters and, like I said, subsequently turned the gun on himself. A church employee working upstairs heard the shots, called 911 before he left the building, which is standard. I mean, unless you're armed and trained, you don't stick around. The shooting was over, and all five people were dead by the time police arrived. There was one person, that I guess, that they tried to work on. The church, it's called simply enough, The Church, is a non-denominational church. It's part of a global network of 2,000 local churches. This particular location offers services in English, Spanish, and Mandarin. Its website went offline Monday night. Understandable. Predictably, California Governor Gruesome Newsom piped in with this one. Another senseless act of gun violence in America. Well, of course. I am going to talk about this later. You can bet my reaction and my rant will be as predictable as that of the gun grabbers, just diametrically opposite. More cheery news. This is from the world of MMA, mixed martial arts. Former UFC heavyweight champion Cain Velasquez been arrested for suspicion of attempted murder. He's currently in the Santa Clara County Jail, being held without bond. He was identified as the shooter in an incident Monday night. A victim was transported to the hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. He's 39 years old. He held the UFC heavyweight title in 2010 and 11, and then again in 2012 to 2015. He retired from mixed martial arts in 2009, coaches at a gym he has owned for a while called, appropriately enough, American Kickboxing Academy in San Jose. He actually took up pro wrestling after he retired from MMA, wrestled in Mexico. I guess that's where his family's originally from. And then he later with the WWE, but he was released there at the start of the pandemic in 2020. Actually, he resurfaced in Mexico's AAA promotion late in 2021. He was supposed to be getting more involved this coming year, so don't know what happened. Okay, I always try to not, or I should say not to talk. Don't split infinitives, Hank. I always try not to talk about the State of the Union address. But according to Yahoo News, here are five key takeaways from last night's State of the Union address from Dopey Joe. No masks. Although it was required to have a COVID diagnostic test in order to attend. Dopey Joe also, I guess, announced a test-to-stay program, which would give a person getting a positive test result immediate access to antiviral treatments so that they don't have to be pulled out of circulation. Gee, that would have been cool, I would say, you know, like 2 years ago, 1 year ago. The second, he was, quote, anti-Putin, which included statements that Russian airliners would not be allowed in U.S. airspace. You also saw the presence of Ukraine flag colors in the House chamber. The Ukrainian ambassador to the U.S., Oksana Makarova, being a guest of First Lady Dr. Jill Biden, in case you didn't know, Dr. Jill Biden is a doctor. That's right, a doctor. And apparently, Dopey Joe believes economic sanctions and world criticism will force Putin to back down. He noted that Russia's currency, the ruble, has lost nearly a third of its value since sanctions were imposed. It's probably about half as much value as the dollar has lost since Dopey Joe was installed as president. Oh, and Dopey Joe said that the Department of Justice will pursue more aggressive investigation of Russian oligarchs' financial crimes. Yeah, watch it on that last one, Dopey. You'll lose your ass on that one. That's a tribute to Eric Roberts from Pope of Greenwich Village. But yeah, he'll lose on that one. He may not like what they find. A third point, return to the actual workplace. Yeah, this is a big, mayors and Democrat-run cities, and now Dopey Joe, too, are pushing for people to return to the actual workplace and, quote, fill our downtowns again. Now look, that's certainly noble on the very surface, and I mean the very surface. Something Big Left and Dopey Joe don't understand. Too many people got a taste for the convenience of remote work. And, of course, there are too many that continue to game the system in order to get paid not for not working at all. And guess what? The folks at Amazon, as well as delivery services, they might see revenue drop if this happens. Coincidentally, you know, some of those folks bankroll your campaigns. You got to believe Bill Gates and Mark Zuckerberg, Jeff Bezos and the gang at Google would rather not see telecommuting go away. Andy Hawk in the chat room astutely points out it'll never get back to where it was. He's right. Now, and frankly, in the mind of people like Bill Gates and Anthony Fauci, he's a doctor too, you know, and he is the science. In those guys' mind, any pandemic is a good pandemic. So, yeah, while Dopey Joe may want to finally say COVID is over, he didn't do that, by the way, at least, they aren't willing to give up the level of control that they've enjoyed the last 2 years. Here's a good point, or not a good point, here's a takeaway. Fund the police. Okay, just disregard this one. Barack Obama would never allow that. Now, look, funding via the police, that's certainly a possible go-to. I mean, think of it this way. Things like training and enabling the police to drop off pallets of bricks or allow police vehicles to be used to ferry away stolen merchandise, that wouldn't be off the table with these folks, and they'd call that fund of the police. But when they say fund the police, oh, hell no, they wouldn't do that. Don't, I mean, if you heard that and are encouraged, don't be. The other thing they said is what was said and what was not said. For instance, no mention of January 6th of 2021. Climate change was only mentioned twice. Meanwhile, evidently, Dopey Joe is now concerned with inflation and said, quote, my top priority is getting prices under control. He also plans to release another 30 million barrels from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve and called for a return of manufacturing to the United States. Hey, Dopey Joe, are you there? Hello? Knock, knock. First, climate change is a non-starter. We know the investigations of January 6th aren't going so well anyway, and may only get worse. And 30 million barrels from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, you moron, you already tried that once. It didn't make a dent. Why not have energy production make a return to the U.S.? By the way, manufacturing jobs were returning to the U.S., but you did your damnedest to get rid of both. But here's the subtle difference. Manufacturing is loaded with union employees. That's why his cry of, instead of relying on foreign supply chains, let's make it in America. Look, let's be honest. Nobody with any self-respect took him seriously. And frankly, anyone who watched State of the Union over, I don't know, Gilligan's Island reruns, you got your priorities twisted. But look, be that as it may, from what little video I watched, it's pretty clear. It took everything for Dopey Joe to deliver that speech, which is probably why it went barely an hour. And Governor Kim Reynolds of Iowa, she delivered the GOP rebuttal. She had a pretty easy job of it, let's face it. Here is my review of the State of the Union speech, by the way, courtesy of Rob Reiner, and this is Spinal Tap.
The review you had on Shark Sandwich, which was merely a two-word review, just said shit sandwich.
Where did they print that?
Where did they print that?
No, real.
You can't print that.
It's true, though. It's true. Shit sandwich. After reaching no deal between Major League Baseball owners and the Players Association, the league canceled the first two series of the 2022 Major League Baseball season. This means that should they arrive at an agreement that would end the owner's lockout sooner rather than later, the season would likely be shortened from 162 games to 156 games. Of course, nobody is taking my suggestion from last year, which is brilliant, by the way. You do two 75-game seasons sandwiched around the All-Star break. You have a first half winner, you have a second half winner. So it gives more teams a chance to make the playoffs. So a team, regardless how it began the season, still has a shot in the second season. And it's really simple. If a team wins its division in both halves, the second place winners, should they be different teams from one half to the next, they would play a one-game playoff. You do that for, and should every division have the same winner in both halves, then you have the second place teams have their one-game playoffs. And should it be the same team that finishes second both halves, then voila. In any event, you get 12 playoff teams, six in each of the American and National League. The top two teams in each get a bye. The bottom four play a best of five. The two winners then play the top two in best of seven, and then the league championship series, and then the World Series, all going best of seven. Look, man, it gives teams new life after the All-Star break. It also allows first half winners to work with lineup changes, deal with injuries. It actually allows teams to have more player movement between their major league club and their minor league affiliates, because you could do some kind of thing like the last 10 games of each half season or whatever, and do something, or 20 games, whatever, and allow more free movement. Maybe, you know, be allowed to tinker with the playoff rosters a bit. Now, the worst part of all this, Of course, spring training is probably going to get axed, most likely, or at least very, very shortened. Look, there are small and medium towns all over Florida and the southwestern U.S. They count on spring training communities each year. Imagine if the Daytona 500 was canceled or the Indy 500 was canceled. Or think of it this way. Where would Louisville or Saratoga be if whole racing seasons were canceled? I mean, look how bad things already are in some towns with minor league venues. And, of course, this is all after they took the All-Star game from Atlanta and moved it to, like, Denver, man. Sorry, Hawkeye Mike. I know you live in Colorado, but it's a pot smoke town now. CPAC took place this past weekend in Orlando, Florida. Speakers included displaced President Trump, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, Tulsi Gabbard, Candace Owens, Donald Trump Jr., Senator Ted Cruz, Glenn Beck, a lot more, actually. Most significant part of the conference was the straw poll for the 2024 presidential race. Despite it being in Florida and despite the popularity of Governor DeSantis, the results showed that 59% would at that moment favor President Trump in 2024, only 28% supporting or favoring Governor DeSantis. Believe it or not, Mitt Romney and John Kasich got votes, as did Florida Senators Marco Rubio and Rick Scott. I've met Rick Scott. He's a hell of a good guy. I just don't see him ever wanting to run for president. And frankly, I'm not a big fan of senators in the White House anyway. I mean, you look at Obama, although he plain sucked no matter his background, but also look at Dopey Joe or to a lesser degree, LBJ or even JFK. Senators don't really manage or lead anything other than their own little fiefdoms. And now representatives aren't much better, although they tend to have to actually run their offices. And they have to negotiate their way through a body of 435 members. And so they're probably better at working across the aisle and outside their own little worlds. Governors are better. They've been CEOs politically, as it were. Business people are better still, while lawyers, again, sorry, Mike, are probably the worst, whether that be as president or damn near anywhere else in government. Of course, in the case of Rick Scott, he served as a business CEO and as Florida governor. I put him, though, sort of in the same grouping as my friend, former congressman and Florida Attorney General Bill McCollum. They're great guys, but maybe too nice, and they're just about the last people that would get down and dirty when it comes to campaigning. Hell, when Rick Scott and Bill McCollum actually faced off in the Florida gubernatorial primary in 2010. Now, Rick Scott, of the two, got a little more down and dirty, but it was really what it was a matter of two very class act guys who simply wouldn't sink to the levels that we normally see by the typical scumbags. I don't think Rick Scott has the stomach for it on a national level, quite frankly. Good guy, I just don't see him, but I think it's because it was in Florida that he would have gotten mentioned. But a great guy, no doubt a great guy. So, you know. You know, we're 2 years away, but remember when 2 years away meant eternity? Remember that? I mean, I don't know. I just don't know. I mean, what happened to having 2 years of, or 3.5 years of, you know, just letting them be president or whatever they were. Now, I mean, as a representative with a two-year cycle, you literally, the day after you get elected, you're already campaigning for the next cycle. As a senator, you're taking a half a year off, maybe 2 years up to with a six-year. But seriously, I mean, we've been talking about it, and then they did it. You know, this is not new. This has really been going on really since Ronald Reagan was president, really. I mean, they were talking about trying to get him out almost before he got shot in 1981. I mean, it's really Iowa Hawkeye women's basketball team is actually the one making the noise in Iowa City right now. Now, there are some delusional folks who will disagree, but to me it's pretty clear that sophomore Caitlin Clark should be the National Player of the Year. The kid's phenomenal. I don't know if you've seen her, but if you get a chance, she can bomb from long range. She can shoot inside the arc. She can handle the ball and pretty much everything else. She leads the nation in scoring. She also leads the nation in assists. Yeah, Jordan Bohannon, please take note. By the way, the last Iowa player I can remember leading just the conference in both scoring and assists was Hawkeye men's guard Andre Woolridge back in 1997. He was actually the first Big Ten player to do that. So, yeah, this, in other words, Caitlin Clark is a rare talent. Yeah, she's also 23rd in free throw percentage, 18th in three-point field goal percentage, or 18th in three-point field goals per game. But yeah, there are people ranking on her, just like there were people ranking on Luka Garza last year. Suffice it to say, though, after winning a share of the Big Ten regular season title this past weekend, they could go far in both the conference and the NCAA tournaments. Now, obviously, there are a lot of good teams out there, but they're up to 12th in the latest poll. And by the way, Caitlin Clark is the women's Big Ten player of the year. That's official. So, yeah, watch her. Google it up. Watch her highlights. She's a fantastic player. Back to Dopey Joe. He recently appeared on the podcast of progressive podcaster Brian Tyler Cohen, who asked Dopey Joe to address the frustrations that are being mentioned outwardly by many Dems. And Dopey Joe's response is almost more AOC than AOC herself. There, I did it. I got in my AOC mention for the show. I'm hoping it's the last one. I know you all are hoping for that. We'll see. Anyway, Dopey Joe had an answer for Brian Tyler Cohen, and here it is. There's a phenomenal negative psychological impact that COVID has had on the public psyche. And so you have an awful lot of people who are, notwithstanding the fact that things have gotten so much better for them economically, that they are thinking, but how do you get up in the morning feeling happy? Happy that everything's all right. Yeah. In other words, Americans are too stupid or too distraught to feel happy in light of all the wonderful happiness he has brought them economically. Is this guy delusional or just stupid, or did the programming not take? I mean, good God. Inflation as a whole is over 7%, its highest since 1982. Now, here's the other thing. This guy, this joker thinks that people getting their jobs back after the COVID pandemic, he considers that job creation. He literally does. Now, granted, the media backs him up, but he considers that job creation. Seriously, does this guy not get it, or does La Dopey Nostra just believe they can put forth anything and that big media will run with it and things will come out fine? I mean, I mentioned the 7%. On the surface, one might say, well, after all the stimulus, but the growth itself is positive. What they are not telling us is that the 7% is an aggregate. The things going way up, the things that skew it and actually make it worse, are things like food prices and certain durable goods, and of course, gas prices. As in, gas prices are 50% higher or more since front boss Dopey Joe took office. This literally is AOC logic, but dumber. I mean, AOC at least garners economic knowledge from bits of books, bits of TV news, bits of internet news, and the like. I mean, Alexander Pope, in his essay on criticism, said, a little learning is a dangerous thing. Now, people misinterpret it and say, a little knowledge. No, that's not what he said. He said, a little learning. People can read, you know, it's like skimming a magazine article or doing cliff notes. That's what AOC does. She still fucks them up, but she does that. She has cliff notes and then comes off with these statements. Stupid, moronic, completely baseless, but at least she tries to do it that way. Dopey Joe, I have no idea where he gets this stuff. I don't. First of all, how are things even remotely better since he took office? Name something, anything, actually improved since he took office. Don't dare anyone tell me, people have returned to work, Hank. I already addressed that one. You definitely don't want to get on the phone and say that, or to my face, because that's not only an argument you can't win, it's also a humiliation I could not be forced to pass up. Either I will shred you, or someone from the crew will call in to shred you, whether it's Mike or Indy or Brother Tommy or T-Bodie. Someone will call in to shred you. Any member of the crew in their groggiest, sickest, or drunkest state would verbally and logically put you through the process of castration if you tried to do that. God forbid one of the other Global Patriot radio hosts would hear you try it. Call in on their shows and try something like that. Whether it's Vito and Al or Eric or Paul or Andra or Osama or Christy, they would sink you. Other people on Global on Blog Talk, Tim Tapp, Chief, Holger, Dave and Jeeski, Annie, Joseph Gibson, they'd bury you if you tried pulling that. That's just names off the top of my head. It's quite literally an argument you cannot win. But Dopey Joe goes on a progressive, yes, those were air quotes, a progressive podcast and spews crap like this. What the actual hell? In college football, in the only news item that matters, the Iowa Hawkeyes have moved offensive coordinator Brian Ferentz, yes, the coach's son, from tight end coach to QB coach. Now, he is also the offensive coordinator, as I said. He replaces longtime assistant Ken O'Keefe, who recently retired. Placing Brian as the tight ends coach is former linebacker, correction, legendary former linebacker, Abdul Hajj. He had a recent coaching stint at South Dakota. I know a lot of people think this is odd, but get through your head several facts, okay? And I don't mean this, you know, just do this. Think of it this way. Teaching quarterback and working on quarterback skills, that doesn't happen in practices and on the sidelines. That happens at camps and in private instruction. Managing quarterbacks is done by one of the coaches. In this case, it's Brian Ferentz. No, he isn't teaching Iowa quarterbacks how to throw any more than he taught tight ends how to catch, whether at New England or at Iowa. But as the offensive coordinator, it makes sense for him to work and strategize and game plan with the quarterbacks until the Hawkeyes get a formal quarterback coach again. I have a feeling this is an interim title. So Hawkeye fans, don't freak out, and non-Hawkeye fans, don't lick your chops just yet. I mean, it's no. It's just not going to happen. It's not going to be a big deal. Okay, so Ukraine. I know we have to talk about it. It's terrible what's happening. And as Hawkeye Mike noted last week, this is nothing more than Putin attempting to reconstitute the Soviet Union. I mean, really? I mean, what more can you say? Ukraine has several things that Russia wants. Several things. Nuclear plants, iron, uranium, coal, titanium, natural gas. Yeah, Ukraine is an energy hotbed there, believe it or not. So yeah, Putin isn't doing it just for the real estate. But what of Ukraine President Volodymyr Zelensky? Let's just say this. This guy, laughed at for his inexperience, much the way President Trump was, is proving himself beyond anything Dopey Joe could ever exhibit. Well-known beatdown of corn pop aside, of course. President Zelensky has been offered sanctuary. He's been offered assistance to leave Ukraine. And he's really only asked for material and moral support, not troop support, outside of the European Union. His response is that he's staying. He has told European Union leaders that this is most likely the last they will see him alive. Been giving out firearms to citizens who wish to take up the fight. Can you imagine the gun grabbers here if a Republican president did that? Can you imagine? Can you even imagine if President George W. Bush had done that right after the attacks on our country on 9/11/01? Can you imagine if they had done a, rather than a gun buyback, if they had done a gun giveaway program? Can you imagine what a Rosie O'Donnell would have done? Her head would have exploded. Amazingly, our country actually did come together for a couple months. But once the U.S., rightfully, by the way, went after bin Laden and others in Afghanistan, Big Left hunkered down. Not for peace, not for an unjust war. No, Big Left hunkered down because the poll numbers, the positive poll numbers for President George W. Bush were alarming for them. I mean, look at the disgusting way they tried to portray Mr. Hines when he ran for president in 2004. Anyone remember that hideous entrance Goose Hunter Lurch tried to pull off at the Democrat National Convention in 2004? I had to sit through that with a bunch of Presbyterian Democrats. We were at a retreat center in North Carolina. My wife was attending a Christian education conference. I had to endure these people. He's got it, and other disgustingly gaga sentiments. Remember, he comes up, "I'm John Kerry reporting for duty," and that stupid ceremonial faux military parade that they ran him through. My God, I mean, Big Left and much of mainstream America, frankly, is light years away from President Zelensky and the Ukrainians that are staying their ground, willing to fight, hell, willing to die to preserve their country. What do we got? Dopey Joe, front boss puppet for La Dopey Nostra, eating his damn ice cream and walking around aimlessly and recreating, from a mainstream media perspective, the definition of the word reality. You think it was bad when they redefined the words vaccinated and immunity? Let me tell you, what they've done to the word reality, not to mention the word truth, has them setting new standards, I swear. President Zelensky has guts. He has balls. He has national pride, dignity, and a willingness to sacrifice. He has love for his country and its people. He has a sense of decency and a sense of right and wrong when it comes to national sovereignty. Dopey Joe and his dopey ho have none of that. Okay, on that front, the U.S. Has booted 12 Russian U.N. diplomats over security concerns. That was a decision made in full accord with U.N. standards, whatever the hell U.N. standards might mean. FIFA, the world governing body for soccer, has banned Russia from the 2022 World Cup. A seminary in the Ukrainian city of Lviv has become a refugee center. That is spelled L-V-I-V and pronounced Lviv. Has become a refugee center, but now faces missile and bomb attacks from Russian forces. Putin has put Russian nuclear forces on alert after the initial resistance and response from Ukraine. World leaders almost everywhere are denouncing the Russian invasion. Now, interesting, I've read some stuff from military observers. One prevailing thought is that Russia has not really fought a near-peer enemy since 1945. And they only recently revived their Zampolit group in 2018. Thus, the question becomes that they ask, how committed are these guys? Would they be willing to destroy whole cities, along with everyone and everything in them, just to satisfy an egomaniacal and megalomaniacal leader? It's a good question. The U.S. also has shut down embassy operations in Belarus after that country's pro-Russia puppets pledged support for the invasion and even allowed Russian troops to pass through on the way to Ukraine. Talks of a ceasefire have yet to achieve any results. La Dopey Nostra has frozen Russian central bank assets held by Americans. Russia has also lost access to SWIFT payment system, which will eventually make trade with Russia very risky, will more than likely start to freeze Russia out of international deals, including exportation. Russian troops headed to Kiev, the capital of Ukraine, are encountering supply issues, supply line issues. President Zelensky has asked the European Union for immediate membership. And Vladimir Putin made a speech on Russian television where he claimed the U.S. has armed Ukraine with nuclear weapons in order to topple Russia. He said that, folks. I mean, we're literally back to Brezhnev era, or, you know, Soviet era news there. This from the Epoch Times. This is a terrible story, unfortunately. It's a very sad story. Oh, gosh, I hate reading these, but the title, January 6th, defendant takes his own life, died of broken heart, family says. Matthew Perna, 37, was prosecuted for his 20-minute walk through the U.S. Capitol. That's the subheading. Matthew L. Perna, a Pennsylvania man prosecuted for his 20-minute walk through the U.S. Capitol on January 6th, 2021, took his own life on February 25th due to, quote, a broken heart, unquote, and a justice system that, quote, killed his spirit and his zest for life, his family said. Perna, 37, of Sharpsville, was due to be sentenced on April 1st in U.S. District Court in Washington, D.C., in a plea agreement on charges of obstruction of an official proceeding, aiding and abetting, entering and remaining in a restricted building or grounds, disorderly and disruptive conduct in a restricted building or grounds, and disorderly conduct in a Capitol building. One charge is a felony, the others misdemeanors. Perna learned that prosecutors would seek an even longer jail sentence based on, quote, domestic terrorism deterrence, unquote, Julie Kelly of American Greatness wrote on Twitter on February 27th. His online obituary reads, his community, which he loved, his country, and the justice system killed his spirit and his zest for life. He didn't break, touch, or steal anything. He did not harm anyone as he stayed within the velvet ropes taking pictures. For this act, he has been persecuted by many members of his community, friends, relatives, and people who had never met him. Constant delays in hearings and postponements dragged out for over a year, the obituary said. Because of this, Matt's heart broke and his spirit died, and many people are responsible for the pain he endured. Matt did not have a hateful bone in his body. He embraced people of all races, income brackets, and beliefs, never once berating anyone for having different views. Jerry Perna, Matthew's aunt, said the tragedy was beyond devastating. He was the kindest person you ever met, she told Epoch Times. He was not like some of those rioters who went there acting obnoxious. No, that wasn't our Matthew. Jerry said the family never understood why the U.S. Department of Justice filed a felony charge in the case. He didn't have a weapon. He didn't have an altercation with police officers. He didn't break anything or steal anything or take anything, she said. The prosecutor's sentencing recommendations haven't been posted online yet. Charging documents said Perna and Stephen Ayers entered the Capitol at 2:47 p.m., nearly 30 minutes after Congress adjourned due to rioting, and nearly an hour after Vice President Mike Pence's motorcade was seen leaving the Capitol, court records show. Perna remained in the building for 20 minutes, filming with his phone. At one point during his time in the Capitol, according to a government statement of facts, on January 18, 2021, Perna, quote, became frustrated and, using a metal pole, tapped on a window of the Capitol building. Court records don't allege that he damaged the window or any other property or committed any violent or disruptive acts. Prosecutors wrote that Perna wore a red Make America Great Again sweatshirt and chanted USA, USA while filming with his phone. Perna later uploaded an 8-minute video to Facebook in which he allegedly said, it's not over. Trust me. The purpose of today was to expose Pence as a traitor. Two unnamed informants who said they were familiar with Perna called the FBI on January 13th, 2021, after recognizing him in videos posted online. I'm going to address that in a little bit. One alleged that Perna purchased a handgun in the previous several months, court records show. There is no indication Perna had any type of weapon with him on January 6th, even if the informant's allegation was true. The second informant, quote, believed he was a conspiracy theorist and supported QAnon, the FBI said in court documents. Prosecutors described Q as, quote, a sprawling, discredited, anti-establishment conspiracy theory, unquote, that says the world is run by, quote, a cabal of Satan-worshipping pedophiles and child traffickers, unquote. Charging documents said the Q theory is, quote, a false belief. Getting all this? Perna approached the FBI on January 14th as soon as he heard that his photo was posted as number 73 on the FBI's January 6th most wanted list. He met with agents at his home the same day. He told them that the Capitol doors were wide open when he approached the building and that a group behind him, along with Ayers, was pushing forward to get in. He went to Washington, D.C. on January 6th to peacefully stand up for his beliefs, the obituary said. Matthew Lawrence Perna was born on March 1984 to Lawrence and Veronica Perna. He graduated from Sharpsville High School in 2002 and later earned a degree from Penn State University. He taught English to children in Thailand and South Korea, his obituary said. He traveled widely in Europe, Asia, South America, India, and around the United States. His mother, Veronica Rani Perna, died at age 59 in March 2015. The next section is titled, January 6th Takes a Grim Toll. One prominent January 6th defendant took to Twitter on February 27th to say he understands the pressure that Perna must have felt with his case dragging on so long. He said, I don't know Matthew Perna, haven't studied his case or accusations against him, but he has killed himself, and I understand why. Wrote Brandon Straka, the founder of the Walkaway campaign that encourages liberals to leave the Democratic Party. I had the same thoughts many times this past year. The deafening silence of Republicans and conservative media for people dragged through this hell is unbearable. Straka was sentenced in January to 3 years of probation and fined $5,000 as part of a plea agreement on one count of engaging in disorderly or disruptive conduct in a Capitol building. Perna's suicide is a grim reminder of the ongoing toll from January 6th and its aftermath. Ashley Babbitt, 35, was shot and killed by Capitol Police Lieutenant Michael Byrd just outside the Speaker's lobby. Roseanne Boylan, 34, was trapped under a stampede when police released some kind of gas in the Lower West Terrace tunnel and pushed rioters and protesters out, witnesses said. An unconscious Boylan was then beaten repeatedly with a walking stick by Metropolitan Police Department officer Lila Morris, video shows. One of the strikes to Boylan's head caused her nose to bleed. Her family believes she was still alive when the beating occurred. Another strike caused the walking stick to break. She died on January 6th. Derek Vargo, 32, alleges that he was pushed off the landing between the upper and lower west terraces by a Capitol Police motorcycle officer. Video shows Vargo walking along a narrow ledge outside the balustrade when he was shoved off the wall by an officer and fell some 20 feet. He suffered severe foot and spinal injuries. Vargo plans a lawsuit against Capitol Police. Dozens of defendants charged with alleged January 6th crimes have been held in jail for more than a year while awaiting trial. Inmates at the Central Detention Facility in D.C. have said they suffered beatings by guards, been denied food, made to march around the jail carrying their mattresses, punched for singing the national anthem, and placed in solitary consignment for months. Now, that's bad enough. obviously. I mean, you know, you hear about people that are on death row for murders that they did commit. And yet people like Susan Sarandon are willing to lay down in front of a road grader or storm this building or that building to get murderers off of death row. God forbid there was ever any mistreatment in prison. But here we have people. Okay, people who, some of whom definitely broke laws by breaking in. But prison, being withheld food, being denied due process or right to speedy trial. I just, it's mind-boggling. Now, and I said I was going to touch back on this. You remember my friend Rich, who was on January 6, 2021, driving with his wife home, driving home to the Carolinas. They had driven up there to just take part in the Stop the Steal rally. They had no problem, you know, they had no plans to go inside. Now, if you remember, Rich talked about police there knew who Antifa members were, knew who BLM members were, talked about the fact that there were little different skirmishes and police matters around the city that were pulling, were a direct attempt to pull these police officers away from the Capitol area. Remember Rich talked about President Trump's speech? For anybody that's sitting, that is still saying President Trump incited this, F off. He did not. But more than that, it's clear that officers stepped aside. It's also clear that they opened doors that were supposedly supposed to be locked. They opened them. They allowed them inside. So what happened to my friend Rich? I've touched on it briefly. So he got home, and he posted stuff in various things to show that basically 99% of it was a peaceful rally. There was no intent to storm the Capitol by 99% of these people. There was, or more. There was no intent to storm the Capitol or to attack Congress members. It's pretty clear that most of those that did that, you know, we still talk about that one guy, what's his name, Ray something, that, I don't know why I keep forgetting his name, Ray is his first name, that, you know, that shows up on all kinds of video and yet they're not charged with anything. The FBI says they're not assets or plants that won't go any further. I mean, we saw how long they tried to withhold the names of Capitol Police officers that were involved in deaths. So my friend Rich gets home. He posts the stuff on Facebook. He talks about stuff with people. About a month afterward, and he gets calls from people, you know, just people that he was familiar with but didn't know very well, but through work and stuff, people calling him up and asking him stuff, and he didn't think much of it. He just sort of says, my personal business, blow off. He had every right to be there. He wasn't there on work time. A couple months after that, or maybe a month after that, he gets called into his office. Now, he works at a university hospital or a university-connected hospital. He gets called in and gets pushed around on some COVID stuff. And then they sort of drop at the end of it that, oh, by the way, you've been or are being investigated by the FBI because it was brought to our attention that you were in Washington, D.C. on January 6th, and we thought it merited telling them and letting them know that you at least were there and that things had happened. And we asked them, what evidence did you have that I did anything, that I even got into the Capitol building, which I didn't. I didn't get to past the sidewalk of the Capitol. And that was during the early portions when I was just filming people. What gave you the idea that I did anything there that would rise to the level of anything other than an observer and peace-going attendee? Well, they weren't sure, they said, but they'd been told some things that made them, they felt it warranted notifying the FBI. They weren't responding to an inquiry from the FBI. Mind you, they notified the FBI. They didn't ask him beforehand, what was your involvement? They didn't ask him beforehand, did you break any laws? Did you break anything? They didn't ask him any of that. They didn't ask to see, they could have gone on his social media. They didn't ask, but he would have allowed it. They didn't do any of that. They just thought that they should notify the FBI. Now, I don't know that he wasn't clear on whether he was actually questioned by FBI. He wonders if some of the calls he got were actually FBI people and not people just asking general questions about, hey, what was it like there or whatever. He wonders that now, I believe. But he wasn't told by his employer that they turned him in, so to speak, for something that he didn't do. And by the way, he had every right to be there. Let's not forget, now I'm not talking about the people that broke in, but the people that were just at the Capitol, outside the Capitol, had every right to be there. Now we have a friggin' fences and walls and barricades around our Capitol. Our Capitol, by the way. The Rich had every right to be there. And his employer turned him in. Now think about that. Think about your employer. Do you trust your employer now? Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't, but I'm saying, can you? Do you work for a large employer that's run by some elitist scumbag type? Now, look, I'm going to say something here. I'm not talking about being elite. Don't be a reverse pro. You know how there's reverse snobbery and reverse racism? Don't be a reverse pro. Don't pretend that you're such a proletariat and all elitism is bad or that all elitists are bad. Whatever you do in life, work, fun, passion, sports, whatever, you should want to be elite at what you do. If you don't seek to be elite at what you do, or at least the best that you can be, then you're a moron. You're an idiot. You're sacrificing life that God gave you to be your best. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about those people that think they're elite, want to be elite, want to exclude other people. Don't be a reverse pro, though. Don't turn around and say, oh, all upper-level people are bad, all CEOs are bad, all government people. Not all government people are bad. Not all CEOs are bad. Not all postal employees are morons. Not everybody who works at Target or Walmart is a moron just because they work at a place like that. Don't be that kind of pro or reverse pro. But do you work for a company where you can trust the leadership? Do you work for a company that was first in line with vaccine mandates? Even though you were working remotely, maybe? Do you work for the kind of company that demands to know your medical records and your history? Do you feel you can trust somebody who wants to know that stuff? Think about that. Well, think about what Rich went through, and now multiply that by thousands. That there are companies out there that you buy orange juice from, or that you buy T-shirts from, or toilet paper, or beer, or hamburger. I don't care. There are companies out there where you stay in their hotels and fly on their airplanes and type on their computers and use their apps. Drive their cars, maybe, or ride their bikes and scooters. There are companies out there that disregard you enough that doing something like that, turning you in like that, doesn't even occur to them as wrong. That have such little regard for you as a person that your history as an employee is meaningless. Thank God I've never experienced that, but I know people that have, including my friend Rich, who's very passionate about his beliefs, very passionate about his anti Joe Biden stance. Now, again, he's not all anti-every government person. He calls out, you know, Republicans just as often are inactive or quiet. As he says, he's a conservative. He's a conservative first, not a Republican first, as am I. Think about that. This guy who did nothing, who went just to film talk and talked with police officers, talked with people of all races, all ethnic backgrounds, all economic backgrounds, all locations from different parts of the country, just to share in this, in the experience, and partake in the American system, by the way. And he works at a hospital where they turned him in just for being there on the theory or on the possibility that he did something wrong. They didn't have the balls to even ask him. They just turned him into the FBI. That's what we're dealing with. Now, think about the people that are in jail and have had very little in the way of either representation or court proceedings. Think about people that haven't been able to get out, haven't gone home, have lost their jobs. Home, what's that? That's gone, probably. Car, gone. Friends, gone. In a lot of cases, think about those people. It's not just La Dope Nostra treating them like that. Because we're part of the system, we're by association as Americans, we're guilty of that too. We're letting our fellow citizens go through this. And it sucks and it's awful. I'm going to take another one from the Epic Times because it's an awesome publication. This they actually got from New. They pulled from Newsmax, I guess. Or no, actually, I got this from Newsmax. Okay. New York Times. New research suggests COVID-19 originated from wet market. Now it says a pair of new research studies suggests that COVID was released from a wet market in Wuhan and that two zoonotic events led to the virus's infection in humans. They pointed to an outbreak of cases around Huanan Seafood Wholesale Market in late 2019. Said the clear picture, it's an extraordinary clear picture that the pandemic started at Huanan Market. Line of research deemed separate from other studies, scientists with the Chinese Center for Disease Control and Prevention on Friday published a study reporting that two main preliminary predictions of COVID-19 months were found at that market. Now, the one guy, Michael Warby, Warby. I don't know. He claimed to have not known the Chinese state until first, but he said the findings are consistent with what was said by Jeremy Camille, an LSU study. Research conducted at the Arizona University analyzed the market at the origin of the outbreak, determining the virus had spread into surrounding roads before jumping across the city. They were not mere chance. It's very strong statistical evidence that this is no coincidence, Warby said. However, according to Moderna's CEO, the notion of a lab leak at the Wuhan Institute of Virology, located 13 miles away by road from the market, remains, quote, a possibility. Stefan Bonchel, he's the CEO of Moderna. He was interviewed on Fox News. He was asked about a study published by Frontiers in Virology, which determined that COVID-19 matches a genetic sequence of DNA patented by Moderna. He said, my scientists are looking into those data to see how accurate they are or are not. As I've said before, the hypothesis of an escape from a lab by an accident is possible. Humans make mistakes. So it is possible that the Wuhan lab in China was working on virus enhancement or gene modification, and then there's an accident where somebody was infected in a lab and then infected family and friends. The lab leak was possible, and scientists are analyzing to know if it's real or not. I guess it begs the question, is this deflection? I don't know. I mean, Hawkeye Mike and I talked about it before. You know, you saw the video with the wet markets and chopping bats' heads off and all that stuff. And you're also, you know, the theory of the manipulation and gain of function research gives rise to the idea that, you know, it gives rise to the idea that both are possible, that it was research that went wrong, not intentionally. I mean, the possibilities are, you know, more than, okay, research went wrong unintentionally, escaped, and it escaped. It happened to be at the market there. The other possibility is that it was somewhere else and got taken to the market where it then flourished or expanded, propagated or whatever. Another theory, it was intentional and it was left, or it was released at the market. Or it was intentional released somewhere else and got to the market, again, where at the market it exploded. There are probably other possibilities as well. Like it was unintentional and nobody knows where it started, but the market is where they first see evidence of it. I mean, you can go down a lot of roads. The bottom line in that is it's almost not important. Yes, it's important to know. It's important to know, especially if it was intentional. And who had what role? As I said, when this broke a little after the arrest of Dr. Charles Lieber, I had just talked about the arrest of Charles Lieber and COVID wasn't really a thing yet. But it occurred to me right away that, wait a second. You know, is this why the Ivy League was quick to cancel everything before everyone else? Did this guy know something? Now, again, that's speculation, of course, but man, don't discount it at least. FBI, speaking of elitists, I mean the FBI, the Ivy League, speaking of elitists, you know, a lot of research at those universities, and who knows? Okay, some happy stuff. NCAA basketball conference tourneys are underway. Some of the non-G6 conferences, you have your in football, it's Power 5. In basketball, it's Power 6. And then you have G6 or G12 or whatever. Several conference tournaments are underway. So they'll finish this weekend. And then the following week, more conferences and the major conferences with the following weekend revealing those champions. Now, of course, champions get an automatic. And there's also a rule, I don't know if it's still in play now, but it used to be, there was a rule if a regular season champion did not get in to the NCAA, especially from like a lesser conference, that was an automatic qualifier for the NIT. I don't know if you want that anymore. Who knows? But I think you're seeing conferences get more than you know, there are less and less one-bid leagues per se. Gonzaga and Arizona are still 1 and 2 in the polls, even after last Saturday. 7 of the top 10 teams lost. Big Ten should get 8 teams in to the NCAA, possibly 9. Michigan and Rutgers still have the most work left, I would say. Michigan's trending right at the right time. Rutgers, not so much. They were on a roll there, but they've hit a couple rough games. I'd say Michigan State's in spite of the fact that they are tanking. Let's face it, knowing Tom Izzo, Big Ten tournament time, NCAA tournament time, that guy can turn it on. I'd still say they're in right now. I think if they lose out, maybe not, but I think they're in. Indiana, same thing. Unless they just completely tank and lose out from here, they may not be in. But I think I'd say – the eight teams that are in, Wisconsin, Purdue, Ohio State, Iowa, Illinois, Michigan State, Indiana, and then Michigan and Rutgers probably have a little bit of work to do. Hawkeyes are on a four-game win streak. Two of those are against, are what you would call quad one wins. At the time ranked Ohio State on the road by 13, and then at home, but a 26-point win over Michigan State, who again lost last night, I believe, to Michigan. Like I said, they're sort of tanking right now. But, you know, Monday they were still tied with the Hawkeyes in the coaches' poll. Go figure. But yeah, the Hawks are on a four-game win streak. Their closest game was against Nebraska, believe it or not. And Nebraska, by the way, went into Columbus last night and took down Ohio State. So, yeah, the Big Ten's a tough league. The big surprise for the Hawkeyes is the lineup change. They put Joe Toussaint on the bench. They brought in Anthony Perkins, and they moved Jordan Bohannon to point guard. Bohannon can light it up, but, man, he still is not exactly an assist machine. He's played better defensively. I'm going to give him that. That's the big surprise. The other surprise is when Patrick McCaffrey was unavailable, they did not go with Chris Murray, Keegan Murray's twin brother. They went with Connor McCaffrey. A real big surprise, like I said, Jordan Bohannon definitely playing better defense the last couple of games. Something has clicked for him. He's actually rotating. He's actually almost kind of aggressive. The biggest surprise, Connor McCaffrey is on a shooting streak. He's hitting three-point shots all of a sudden. Teams will have, if he keeps it up, Brother Tommy doesn't think he will, but if he keeps it up, teams will have to account for him. Means that teams can't double Jordan Bohannon. It means teams can't double Keegan Murray if Connor McCaffrey keeps up his shooting streak and shoots. That's the other thing. He has to take the shots. Now, the most heartwarming, Monday night, there's a senior named Jack Devlin. He's part of their university's REACH program for intellectual, cognitive, and learning disabilities. He's a student manager as a senior. He got an opportunity to take a half-court shot. Yeah, it was at the under four-minute timeout near the end of the game. He missed the first one, but the second one, he hit nothing but net. What was heartwarming was the reaction of the teammates. His co-managers, the staff, I think, stayed on the sideline, the coaches. But the players all came out and just mobbed. They broke out of their sideline huddle and mobbed the kid. And then seeing him on the sidelines, his reaction, it's enough to make you both laugh and cry. It was that touching and that heartwarming to see that. So, you know, for Hawk fans, I got hopes for this team. I don't, you know. Anything can happen. There's the Franuary fade, but, you know, it's not happening right now. I think he has to prove that he can get to Saturday. He's only done it once, and that's, you know, with big, you know, double bye and all that stuff. But if he can make it to Saturday, this could get good. This could get really good. So, and the Big Ten tournament could be really good as well. So, hey, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to play a good song for you while I take a quick break and fill up the coffee, the iced coffee, I should say. This is a song I played for Hawkeye Mike last week. Joe Pesci with Gotta Get Into My Life. I'll be back in 3 minutes, roughly. Enjoy.
Alone, I took a ride, I didn't know what I would find there. Another road where maybe I could find another kind of mind there. Ooh, then I suddenly see I wanted just to hold you. And had you gone, you knew in time we'd meet again, for I'd have told you. You were meant to be near me, ooh, and I want you to hear me say we'll be together every day. Gotta get you into my life. What can I do? What can I be when I'm with you? I wanna stay there. If I am true, I'll never leave. And if I do, I know the way there. Ooh, then I suddenly see you. Ooh, did I tell you I need you every single day of my life?
That just makes me smile. Joe Pesci singing the Beatles classic, Gotta Get You Into My Life. Played that last week for Hawkeye Mike because he's a huge Beatles fan, and I figured, you know, you got to, just like with Brother Tommy having his own song, I had to give him a bit of variation. Like, you don't do the original song. Brother Tommy pointed out, the song itself is good. He really is, and his version is, but when he sings the chorus, that Gotta Get You Into My Life, he's yelling. He's not really singing. He's just yelling, and that's true. That part of it's not as good, but, hey, give the guy credit for taking a shot. Okay, I said I was going to talk about the shooting later and how it, it's going to be used, or they'll try to use it. Look, shooting is tragic. Always, always, even when it's justified, whether it's a legal officer-involved shooting or God forbid, someone has to defend their homestead or their person, it's even more tragic then because oftentimes the emotional and psychological consequences for somebody having to do that are, you know, it's not something that someone would take lightly, ending a life, justified or not. So, yeah, it's tragic. Let's not kid ourselves. It's tragic. But, you know, it's also there's a reason that people are allowed to protect themselves under the Second Amendment. Now, look, as I pointed out, this shooter was under a restraining order. So how the person got a gun isn't really, at that point, almost isn't even relevant. The person got one. Got a gun. How? I mean, that's something they should find out, obviously. But it's almost immaterial because it doesn't bring those kids back. It doesn't bring back the person that was supervising a visit. Now, correctly, especially if it involved domestic violence, correctly, the estranged wife / mother of the children was not there. It's not a good idea. I mean, part of the whole thing with domestic violence is about control. It's not about love or hate. It's about control. And this woman is going to have to live with this. All her three daughters just gone like that. Think she's not feeling some terrible guilt over this? Now look, this shooter took the most cowardly path possible. Taking out someone who was supervising a visit, and then the kids, and then himself. So we have no answers as to why, really. They may find out, but I mean, you don't, you know, there's no history of criminal behavior in this person's past. It's just, and there's no accountability. You know, he's not going to be held accountable other than the ultimate accountability, but it was still cowardly. And again, what does the mother do? Where does she go from here? Devastation? My God. I mean, like I said, somebody who has to use a gun to defend their own life, that's got to be hard enough. But in this case, wow. I mean, how does she recover from this? Now, Governor Gruesome Newsom alluded to gun grabbing with his comments. You know, another senseless act of gun violence. What do you mean another senseless? I mean, there's all kinds of death every day. The dirty little secret, or one dirty little secret, is that most gun deaths are suicides. Overwhelming majority. Not like 51%, but like 80% of gun deaths are suicides. So when this happens, when the gun grabbers come out, as they invariably will, before somebody, I hope, smacks them down. But guess who suffers when this happens? Not the military, not law enforcement. They don't suffer. Certainly not government elites. Laws don't apply to them in their mind. Not wealthy elitists or Hollywood elitists, you know, with their armed bodyguards. So who suffers? You know who suffers? Primarily women. They are the majority of victims of domestic violence, are they not? They're also a less percentage of gun ownership in America. So at a time when they should be learning and have the ability to defend themselves, but restrictions will only make that tougher. Now, as I said, no prior criminal history with this guy, not on any police blotter. So who knows how or where the firearm was obtained? But folks, the Second Amendment is clear. There are no conditions. There are no restrictions. People don't understand, or a lot of people don't understand, the biggest debate at the inception was not the right to keep and bear arms, but the responsibility. The prevailing debate at the time was whether it should be required, whether gun ownership should be required. Which then bore out the attendant debate of if we make them, are we then not under obligation to supply them? And how in the world would we do that? And I'd say a compromise was reached, but it wasn't really a compromise. It was the correct result, which was the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, not the responsibility to bear arms, not the law to bear arms, the right to bear arms. Because again, what about people who do not believe? What about complete pacifists who, though they may not engage in war, can still participate in defense of this country in other ways, as people have throughout its history, our country's history, admirably, I might add. I also wondered, the founders didn't want a standing army, didn't want a professional army. Again, who would pay for it? It has nothing to do with military. I actually had a judge, tell me that all the Second Amendment does is allow our country the right to have a military. Really? That's it? This is a judge. Now, he's not a judge anymore, but this was a judge, a member of the bar, the judiciary, who said, oh, you mean the amendment that allows us to have a military? That was it. That was his understanding of the Second Amendment. It has nothing to do with military and exclusivity, and it has no limits. look, states have the right to impose certain restrictions, but the Supreme Court has made it clear that denying ownership is definitely not within any state's purview. Look at gun laws that have been shot down from D.C. to Chicago to every place in between and elsewhere. It has been shot down because the Second Amendment is clear in what it says. Well-regulated militia being necessary for the defense of a nation. The right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. It's not hard to understand. Now, yes, you have the people that say, literally, who say, well, at the time, only muskets existed. Well, that's wrong. There were cannons, believe it or not. There were firearms of all kinds. There were pistols. There were various types. There were. But as somebody pointed out, yeah, well, at the time the First Amendment was crafted, it was quill and ink. There was no internet. There was no telephone. There were no smartphones. Yet we allow you to spew your crap under the First Amendment. But it's clear. They will try to use this. Now, it may not go very far because I think rational people understand that this wasn't a case of gun violence as much as it was just some dude who was on the way to snapping over the years and finally snapped in finality, and that the gun is only secondary. I mean, some of the most heinous domestic violence deaths you wouldn't believe. I heard a program one time at a Kiwanis meeting, a guy talking about how a woman had left her husband, took her kids, left her husband. She knew he was tending toward violence, but realized when he nail-gunned their cat to a tree that this was a little beyond, and so she left, took the kids, left. Over several years, the man, quote-unquote, got his life together, remarried, or not remarried, but had a girlfriend, became friendly with the ex-wife's parents who remained in the hometown and were the buffer between, you know, for when the kids went to visit him, the father. But they finally all decided, you know, let's get together. Let's have a time where he could go out to visit them with her parents, and they could go out somewhere out west. So they're there, and things are going fine. So they decided, the parents, the girls, the woman's parents, took the kids to get ice cream so that the ex-husband and wife could just talk for a bit and sort of catch up and sort of get past everything. They were gone for half an hour. They came back. The man had taken an iron and bashed his ex-wife's skull in. It had nothing to do with guns. It had everything to do with control. Borderline insanity, probably. Now, was he planning that? Maybe, maybe not. Probably not. I mean, things just escalate sometimes. We're not taking away irons. We're not even forbidding abusive spouses. We're not even prohibiting them from seeing their children. In fact, visitation, in spite of what some people say and say my right, it's about children's access to parents. It's the most misunderstood facet of divorce and custody battles, but visitation is not for the benefit of the parents. It's for the benefit of the children. Children have a right to know their parents, both parents. But let's not turn this kind of a thing into a cry to abolish the Second Amendment or increase gun restrictions. He would have used another method probably, or he would have figured out a way to get a firearm, even with a restraining order. So don't listen to the cries for it. Don't start thinking, oh, you know, maybe. No. This has nothing to do with the gun. any more than spoons are what, you know, spoons don't cause obesity, folks. You know, we don't tell obese people that they can't have spoons, knives, and forks because they've gotten fat because of food. We don't do that. We don't prohibit them from eating. We understand that eating is necessary. I mean, same thing applies here. It's just don't let it happen. Don't let it cloud your whatever. That's pretty much it for the night, folks. I've said what I wanted to say, needed to say. I do have a couple little memes, or you know, one meme I wanted to leave everyone with. I sort of mentioned it before, but the more I think about it, the funnier it gets. Don't forget, Jeffrey Epstein asked Hillary Clinton to be his Valentine. Problem was, she left him hanging. Sorry, I had to. Be thinking about stuff going on. Stay vigilant in your safety. Be thinking about the conference basketball tournaments that are going on. This is a fun time of year. It's an exciting time of year. March Madness coming up. Spring, for those of you in the colder states, might be near. Hey, I got a caller, though. I got a caller, and I got to take this because Sue, is that you?
Yeah, it is. I can't talk long, but well, I've got COVID. I'm fighting it.
Oh.
But anyway, hey, it's 5 days and I'm still alive, so I'm gonna make it. It's just a nasty thing, you know.
Anyway,
I've got a question for you, and it's been floated on some of the other shows too, that DeSantis would make the best president for, 2024? And my question is, how do you think he would handle the world leaders? Like, I don't know if Merkel will still be in, but Macron and, you know, even Putin and all of this, because the hardest reset that there's going to have to be is internationally. You know, we've got a lot of problems here in the United States, that Biden has done so much damage internationally. Can DeSantis handle all these leaders? And that's it. I can't talk anymore, but I just wanted to kind of hear your opinion on this.
Well, I'll tell you what, Sue. It's a great question. I am a huge fan of Governor DeSantis. Now, mea culpa, disclosure, I live in Florida. He would be less incendiary, certainly, than President Trump to the left, but I don't really give a crap about that. But here's, from a selfish standpoint, I think we need the Ron DeSantis's in the governor's mansions. You know, I was never a big fan of Bob Dole running for president in 1996 because we needed Bob Dole in the Senate, you know. And it's the same thing I feel here. Now, is President Trump the one that's going to win? I don't know. But I would prefer Ron DeSantis, you know, stay as governor. Now, might he be a viable vice presidential candidate? Certainly. But I think a lot of people see President Trump now as being from Florida and not from New York, so they might think two Floridians and might not go for that either. So, but no, I would prefer Ron DeSantis stay as governor of Florida. I think it's important that he, you know, he finish out. He's going to be running this year. He runs for re-election this year. So I think it's important for him to finish out his term. I just don't think, and I think, frankly, the CPAC conference kind of says that. I think CPAC kind of tells you that, you know, at 28% to 59%, I don't think he's a serious candidate. So something will have to happen drastically, I think, for him to jump to the forefront, you know, other than President Trump.
Can I say this about DeSantis? So I do see him as being president at some point.
Absolutely.
You know, I don't know if now is the time, but I do see him as presidential material. And I like your take on, you know, finish what you started. you know, anyway, thank you for taking my call.
Oh, thank you for calling, Sue, and get better. Vitamin D, you know, stay up. Don't lay down the whole time. I've read all the good stuff. I'm sure you have too. So stay healthy and keep us apprised of what's going on and as you recover. So do you know where or?
I'm pretty sure on Tuesday of last week I had to go to the doctor, and I probably picked it up then. I mean, the mild COVID is just everywhere,
yeah.
You know, and because it wasn't long after that I started feeling bad, and then I had him here do a COVID test, and you know, Friday was when I found out what it was. I really didn't want to do the COVID test, but I thought, let's just see for sure. So
yeah.
Anyway, yeah. But, you know, the fact I've gone this long with the other COVID, you know, and
yeah.
my health problems, I would have been dead or
yeah.
in the hospital, and I'm not. So I'm
well,
going to
be
thank
God. Fine. Good. Well, stay safe, stay healthy, do what you know you need to do, you know, and don't trust Dr. Fauci. Don't listen to his advice, whatever he might say. So,
never. Okay. Love you. Thanks. Bye.
Thanks, Sue. Love you, too. We'll talk to you later. That is Sue from New Mexico, who is a loyal listener to all the shows here on Global Patriot Radio, but also a great follower on Twitter. I think she goes under Love America 615. I just always type in Sue from New Mexico and it comes up, but she's a great follow on Twitter. She's full of information. She gets stuff all over the place, and she's really been sending out right lately is Sky News. If you follow Sky News, which is from, you know, it's international, it's not the United States. I think it's Australia and or Great Britain where she's getting some of these, some great, great editorials and news stories on Dopey Joe, pointing up and showing the gritty stuff that, you know, our media won't show. I mean, just the blunders, the, you know, we see some of it. Sky News is pulling all this stuff. I mean, it's, and Sue is finding it. And I know you have to be, you know, you have to be savvy. I mean, you can find it, but I mean, she's good at finding it and good at finding the good stories. So yeah, if you're on Twitter, follow her, but she has a lot of other great followers that are just great for informational stuff and great, you know, overall great follows. So great for Sue to call in. Hope she gets better. Pray for her. Pray for the others that we've talked about before. G-Ski's had some challenges. You know, pray for Vito's golf game because Vito's trying to get his golf game really cranking up again. And he wants to be, he's trying to, you know, get stronger out on the course. So that's it. It's been a fun day and a great call from Sue. So glad. And again, pray for her. Like I said, basketball coming up. This is a fun time of year if you follow. I mean, you know, you can spend that first Thursday and Friday of March Madness, frankly, the other two nights before it, too, with the play-in games. But the Thursday and Friday of March Madness is a great time, you know, just jumping from game to game, seeing the upsets, hoping you're not one of those upset victims and laughing when a Duke or someone like that goes down early. So, you know, it's all good when it happens. But it's a very exciting time. Now, Steve Dace on this show said March Madness was more exciting than bowl season. It's a matter of preference. College football to me is it. But college basketball almost as exciting. And when you have a team that's doing pretty well, as Hawkeye Mike says, I like this Iowa team. He, you know, that's what he says. I kind of agree. I see gaps, but I think they're getting better. I think they're starting to pull some of those gaps in. So we shall see. And if you're a fan of another team, hey, good luck to you as well. Folks, that's it. Have a good weekend. Stay safe. Stay vigilant. Don't fall for the crap. And enjoy. Live life. Enjoy life. We will send you out with something really good from Dino, Desi, and Billy. Let's go for it.
Love is somewhere and I
Good night, folks. Have a good one.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.